Welcome to the free-for-all, as always, on Grumblings Media, Thursday nights, 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. You know where to spend your evenings. It's here with us on Grumblings Media with the free-for-all. I am Hody Johns. I am usually joined by my main host, Big John. I know everybody's going to miss him. His hairline puts mine to shame. Thankfully, I have a guest here who has a fantastic hairline, still young and youthful and looks like I did when I was still in second grade. John Hudak of the Fakertarians and of the Michigan Judicial Committee for the Libertarian Party and of the guy running for chair of the Libertarian Party. So it should be a jam-packed episode. As always, we are taking your questions, your comments. We will display some of them on the screen. All we ask is that you please keep it appropriate. No swearing. Keep it positive. We'll display everything that we can. Obviously, if you bombard the chat, I might not be able to get to everything, but I'm very much looking forward to all that. That said, let's go ahead and get started. Dive right in today with John Hudak. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good today, Hody. How about yourself?
Doing well, thank you. You've had an even better week, regardless of how you've done today. Tell us what went on. We actually talked to Angela from the Libertarian Party of Michigan. She gave us kind of the breakdown of all the trials and tribulations last week that the Libertarian Party of Michigan had. She set us up by saying, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. I'm thinking we should have maybe not an overwhelming majority, but just enough to get maybe 50% of the folks there on the side of liberty as opposed to the side of conservatism. I watched the debate live with the LP allies, and honestly, it kind of looked more like a bloodbath in favor of the libertarians. Maybe I'm misinterpreting that, but I just wanted to start generally. What were your thoughts on the weekend? What are some things that we should know, or what happened?
No, it was a very good weekend. The leadership of the Libertarian Party of Michigan is looking substantially different than it did before this weekend. There is a new chair, and I'm going to butcher his last name. It's Justin Miramonte or Miramonte, whichever one. And we have a new vice chair, or two new vice chairs, because there's a first and a second. There's Timothy Teagan and Scotty Bowman. And just generally, I mean, there's been a lot of turnover in the committee. I would say that the optimism ended up being warranted, because the good side won here is the best way to say it. I mean, there's still some interesting parts of the committee, I would say, but there's a lot more ideological diversity. And it's not even like the committee is just some kind of monolith now. Like there are a lot of people from different, what you would call factions, on the committee. It's just that it's not run by Andrew Chatterton anymore, and it's not run by the Mises Caucus anymore, even though there are a few people who are district representatives who would still be considered part of the Mises Caucus. Myself, I was elected to the Judicial Committee along with two other great guys, and it's going to be nice to have a Judicial Committee that's not just a rubber stamp for everything Andrew Chatterton wants to do. The convention itself started slow for about a minute or two, I would say. And then with Andrew Chatterton, he was the outgoing chair of the Libertarian Party of Michigan, for anyone who doesn't know. With Andrew Chatterton's opening remarks, he basically used it as a chance to just attack everyone in the party that he didn't like. It was less at welcome everyone to the convention, thank you for being here, than it was, these people are trying to sabotage the party. They sabotaged me for years. So it just very quickly devolved into Andrew continuing to take shots at people while people were telling him to stop. There was a lot of yelling going on. So that kind of set the tone for the whole thing. I would say, at least mostly, the morning was probably the most contentious part, because what happened was there was a proposed agenda in proposed convention rules that were put in place or proposed by the Chatterton regime, as I like to call it. And that agenda got completely gutted by a good portion of the rest of us there. There were some worries that, well, we knew that we had the room, basically. And there were some worries that the Chatterton side would try to push the officer elections to the second day in the hopes that people would leave. So instead of the convention being 2 days, at least convention business, we ended up changing it to 1 day, and we moved the officer elections ahead of everything else to make sure that those actually got out of the way.
Yeah, okay. Yo, Archie Flowers says, yo, and no shiz, what? What happened up there? Yeah, Archie, as we know, maybe a vocal proponent against the Mises Caucus, one of those early followers, as were you and I, John.
Yeah,
with the Mises Caucus, coming at me from my book club. Also, Archie, as well as Aaron over here, who goes by Magner DeLorean on the YouTubes, and he says, "Hey, hey" to both of you. So, hey, hey, one of those hays is for me. The other,
I'll take the other.
Split, okay. Split that one. Hey guys, thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate it. Again, questions, comments you guys have, feel free to leave them here for us. So what did the shortening of it to 1 day, what was the intention behind that, I guess?
So the intention there was, obviously, if you know anything about the Libertarian Party in Michigan the last few years, there mm-hmm. have been a lot of shenanigans going on in terms of different rules being violated in certain ways, I would say, or being twisted. So the idea of shortening it to 1 day was so that the entire body of delegates would actually be able to vote on everything instead of a large amount of people coming the first day, some people deciding not to come back the second day because some people were driving from all over the state.
Of course.
And on the second day, if that had happened, there could have been all sorts of votes going on where the Mises Caucus people or any faction really stuck around and just kind of asserted their will there. So getting the convention business actually done in 1 day assured that it was actually the will of the delegates that was put forward.
Okay, cool. Well, then I'm glad that it worked out then to all the votes happening on the same day. So Judicial Committee, that should be a very busy job. Aaron says, I'm not actively following LP stuff anymore, but I enjoy listening to both of you and want to support my homies. You are wearing the basketball jersey, so homie may be appropriate for you. I am far too cracker white to be a homie for anybody there.
I'm pretty white myself.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's true. That's true. We've been skipping the tanning days. That's for sure. Joe Hanosh asks, is LP Michigan more or less in favor of supporting libertarian candidates than the previous EC membership? John, I believe the answer would be yes, but
the answer I would give would be considerably more. There are a lot of different, there's a lot of different ideological diversity on the committee, but I think it's going to be a lot better at actually supporting libertarian candidates instead of just doing what the Mises Caucus wants.
Sorry, now Chatterton is still on the LNC, right? This is not like...
He is still on the LNC. He's one of the representatives from Region 1, which was the super region, they called it, where the region gets two LNC representatives. It was a plan by the Mises Caucus at the last convention to try to squeeze out another rep by combining some regions together.
Yeah, that obviously, like you said, with all of those shenanigans, it is everything to me. If you're not involved in the Libertarian Party, you're just like, I don't know, this is weird. What, same day, who cares? Having an extra delegate, whatever, you know, but then all of a sudden you kind of hear things break down. Joe says good to hear. And yeah, it's good to hear that the Libertarian Party is going to support libertarian candidates. So that shouldn't be too much of a struggle, but obviously.
You would think that would be a given, but.
we're on the heels of something. I wanted to talk with you about this a little bit. So one of the reasons, and full disclosure, I like John. We are friends. This isn't just like a guest out of the middle of nowhere who's like book I read once or something. But you understand what happened with the Libertarian Party. And I don't know who all's running for chair. I don't have a complete list of names. But based on the people that I've seen, people don't seem to get the totality of what the Mises Caucus did to the Libertarian Party. And so when we do things like give Brian McWilliams and his staff anonymity for who's making like posts when he himself supported the sellout strategy, and you know, when we hire people on the social media team who are frankly against the planks of the Libertarian Party platform, and then when we have affiliates that are still staunchly anti-libertarian in platform, it's like I always say this, but it's like having a Wendy's that's like, hey guys, send your business to McDonald's. How Wendy's wouldn't put up with that. We need to treat it that way. And you're the only one that I've seen that's like, kind of like, no, this is intolerable behavior. It's not so, well, we're going to talk with them again. Like if I have a manager that's doing that for a Wendy's, they're fired, right? Like it's gone. I understand with libertarians, we don't want to flex this authoritarianism too much. And maybe this is something you can weigh in on, because then it's like if you say, hey, this person's here, this person's gone, you know, then the next person could just say, well, I'm going to do it, but the exact opposite way. And all the libertarians are gone and all the conservatives are here. I don't know what the balance is there, but somebody needs to step up and realize, like, we have an aggressive, like, stage 4 cancer, and it's time to stop talking nicely to the cancer and, like, start being like, hey, we need to cut this out. We need to get some chemotherapy. We are still hemorrhaging members and dollars because we haven't held anybody accountable for what's been done. This is kind of getting into, I'm combining this whole question to talking about kind of your chair run and your visions for the party, but kind of the way you see things. I guess take that open-ended idea question and talk about what you want with it.
Sure. So there's definitely a lot I can touch on there. The first thing I wanted to talk about was that anonymity issue with the social media committee, which is honestly just mind-boggling, because we just had a problem with LNC leadership doing things in secret. I'm talking about Angela McArdle, and doing things without oversight, without the membership knowing what was going on, whether we're talking about the Freedom Call saga or whether we're talking about Angela's flirtation with Trump. And now, at a time when membership really wants to see transparency for the first time in a while, I can't see how anonymity of the social media committee, especially when social media right now is such a hot button issue because of things like LPNH tweeting out white supremacist slogans or talking about race and IQ. I just can't see how someone could think that anonymity for that social media committee would be the right move. And I mean, there have been some things that have leaked out. I had heard, and I'm not making a report on this or something, I saw this going around Twitter, that Ben Weir, the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire chair, was actually on the social media committee, at least as of a couple months ago, right around when they were trying to make it anonymous. So let's just put this in perspective for a second. You have an affiliate that is making news for a ton of different racist and anti-Semitic posts. They're telling a black woman to pick cotton. They're saying that people who support Juneteenth should be deported. All kinds of things like that. And it's not just a tweet here and there. It's, oh, what are they tweeting again today? So you have that. And they're not slowing down at all, the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire. And it's not even like the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire is the only problem, but they're pretty representative of the problem. When you have someone who's in charge of that party, that state affiliate, and they're doing nothing to slow down that type of messaging, I don't get how you can put them on the National Libertarian Party's social media committee. It's just completely mind-boggling to me, where you see a problem, instead of fixing the problem, you take someone who's causing the problem and give them additional responsibility. As far as some of the other things you talked about, cutting out the cancer and all of that, I completely get the idea that we should generally, as libertarians, get along and that we should be a big tent party. I want agreement between different factions. There's the Radical Caucus, there used to be a Pride Caucus, there was a LibSot Caucus, there used to be an Audacious Caucus, all sorts of different caucuses. I don't think there's only one good type of libertarian. But with the Mises Caucus takeover, this wasn't just, ideological faction is getting their way a little bit more than the other. This was a hostile outside takeover. These were people joining the party specifically with the idea of taking it over and changing it to something completely different. They recruited on that. They recruited on, come on, let's kick out the Walberts, as they called them at one point. They wanted to get rid of, and we have seen some of the changes they've made in terms of the abortion plank and messing around with things on the immigration plank, getting rid of the bigotry plank, which was basically a welcome mat for white supremacists to come in, which is exactly what happened when you look at people like Jeremy Kaufman tweeting about race and IQ from the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire Twitter account. This isn't just infighting. Infighting is where people are working towards a common goal. And instead of working towards that common goal, they're squabbling amongst themselves. There are different goals going on here. I believe it was actually Jeremy Kaufman who said, and I'm butchering the quote here, but it was around when he first got involved in the takeover part of the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire. It was something like, my objectives might be different than yours. He said that on Twitter a few years ago, and I don't remember the exact wording, but it definitely rings true. Because we're at a time right now where the President of the United States is deporting people en masse. He's throwing people in concentration camps in the Everglades. He's sending people to third world gulags without due process. And instead of actually doing some kind of messaging on that, we're tiptoeing around that. And occasionally there is a little bit of good messaging that comes out from the LP about that. But it's like the people running the account do not want to piss off the people that actually are okay with that kind of stuff. And the Libertarian Party, as a party who is for freedom for all, should be absolutely screaming from the rooftops about that kind of thing.
Yeah, Archie mentioned that they called them the Loser Brigade, and Aaron says his red line for coming back is the restoration of the bigotry and abortion planks. And, I mean, why not? Like, if the people who invaded took over the party, destroyed some things, you're like, I'll come back when the house is fixed, right? It's like your house gets flooded. You're like, I'm going to fix it first, right? Get the mold out of there, and then I'll come back, you know? If they're just like, well, you can live in the house still. It's just, it's going to be flooded. Why would we do that? Yeah, I appreciate, and I guess I set you up just to kind of talk about it, just because it's so important that we need to understand what this was. It was a hostile takeover. It was an attempt to sell the party out for Trump. It sadly was successful. They did a lot of damage. Ben Weir, as you mentioned, being part of the social media team, I caught his appearance with the LP Allies just like a month ago. And he tanked the membership in his state by 10% this year, and we're in July. Like, this is, if somebody tanks like their sales at the Wendy's by 10%, I'm not giving that guy a promotion, right? Like, to the right. Hey, you know what, you did so good with your Wendy's tanking everything by 10%, let's put you in charge of McDonald's, you know, Wendy's, you know, corporate messaging, you know, like, that's it's idiotic. And the thing that is, it keeps happening, and then there's backlash, and then they kind of, sometimes they'll fire the person, but sometimes they'll just be like, let's just give them anonymity. Like, this needs to stop happening. We keep making the mistakes in the same direction, and this can't keep happening.
And there are people like dying to get involved and dying to have a reason to donate money. I even think not even disaffiliation, but even if there were a censure motion for LPNH, if that had passed, I think we would have seen an influx of donations because it would have actually sent a message that things had really changed. And I know I had seen donations come in when Angela resigned. There were donations that came in when Michael Heiss was finally let go as an employee. But at least some steps in the right direction could actually get this thing back on track. And I mean, I think there are some pretty common sense changes that you can make as far as LPNH, as far as the social media, the messaging. There are people that are looking for an alternative to the two parties, and some of them are former Libertarian Party members. Some of them are ideological libertarians. There are people that have huge amounts of institutional knowledge that would actually have a good idea about how to turn this party around, and they just want nothing to do with it if this is what the party's going to be.
So I came from the Republican Party, and the big thing was I was just tired of being racist, bigoted. I was just tired of defending that stuff, right? And I wasn't a full-fledged libertarian yet, I admit that. But, like, I was ready to embrace, you know, something that I knew was true, right? Like, I just was like, I'm looking for a home elsewhere. And from the left side, how many of them are tired of seeing the Democrats? I mean, you looked at, as soon as they lost this election, what, it was too Democratic? Representatives who proposed anti-trans legislation on sports, right? They were like, all right, we're sorry. Like, we're going to sell that out. And you saw what Harris ran on the don't come here, right? Immigration.
Yeah, the immigration stuff.
You know, and so if you are pro-immigrant or anti-war or anti-bigotry, the other two parties are not for you, right? Like, they are explicitly not for you. You're the first one they're going to throw under the bus. And so when I look at like a place, it makes the least sense right now to be a feeder league to the Republicans or Democrats. And here we are willing to play AAA to the Republicans just for some like kingmaker strategy. And look how that's turned out, right? Like the worst tyrant in my lifetime for America. Like, it's just really, really a dumb idea. I wanted to, let's go ahead and progress things forward a little bit because we could go on that all day. Let's finish off the Mises talk here. What do you see as their influence? It, obviously, in things like Michigan, it looks like it's waning, or are they going to dig in and come back stronger? We have to remember the Mises caucus lost and lost and lost before winning. And so I am always hesitant to write them off, especially without one singular faction kind of looking to defeat them. Maybe a coalition of factions could unseat them if that coalition is exciting enough. So are they actually losing influence, or are they going to gain influence, or did they do the job they came to do, destroyed the party, and now they're joining the Republican Party, which was always their goal? Like, which of those three do you think is happening? What's kind of your outlook on the Mises caucus going forward, especially now that they're chaired by the author of the sellout strategy, Angela McArdle herself?
So I don't think they're done trying. I do think that they have lost a lot of influence. I think there has been some very significant fracturing of the caucus. And I mean, you've seen that on the LNC. The LNC that was elected was hugely pro-Mises at the time. There have been a lot of resignations and different people appointed, but even some of the former Mises members of the LNC are no longer Mises members. And some of them were involved in the McArdle investigation, and some of them are huge opponents of her at this point. But I do think that Angela and Michael Heiss and the rest of the Mises caucus leadership probably do see this as an opportunity right now. They have completely tanked. I'm sure there are some members that are happy with what has gone on as far as them achieving their goal, like Angela achieving her goal as far as getting Trump elected. But I do think there are some differing goals between the membership, and I also do think they want control of the party for the future. There is an opportunity for them right now to regroup, which needs to be guarded against. because there's kind of a power vacuum going on right now. There's a lot of resignations on the LNC. There's no clear faction in charge of the party, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because you do want different factions working together. But it does leave an opening for the Mises Caucus, Angela, Michael Heist, those kind of members of the Mises Caucus specifically, to claw their way back in. And I do think they are going to be making a pretty hard run for things in 2026, as long as Angela isn't at her Trump administration job that doesn't seem like it's actually going to happen at this point. It was funny, actually, in her video where she announced that she was becoming the chair of the Mises Caucus a couple months ago, she even mentioned that the Trump administration job was coming any day now, or it was getting delayed. So in the meantime, she was going to be the Mises Caucus chair. So she's still acting like that's on the table.
Any day now. I mean, she had to resign at like midnight, you know, on the day that her embezzling was exposed to take this job. But that job hasn't quite panned out yet. And you know, it was a temporary job and it was over for a little bit. But now that that job actually hasn't happened at all, she's flip-flopping so much. I don't know if she's like just like wants to be like Trump. Like she just feels if she lies hard enough, idiots will believe her or something like that.
That's kind of what I've gotten out of it. I think she's just kind of waiting for it to go away, and then she'll have some reason why she ultimately didn't get the job, and she's just hoping that she won't actually have to answer for it, because a big part of the Mises Caucus strategy, for a while actually, is kind of keeping things in a vacuum and keeping outside influence out. Like, even when things were ran primarily through their Facebook group, they very carefully curated what was let through and what wasn't. They had a strategy for what they wanted talked about, how they wanted it talked about, so that they could influence their membership and influence what their membership believes.
Yeah, I remember there was even somebody with the Tom Woods thing who was like, hey, I'm Mises Caucus to the core, but it sure does look like he kind of lied about never seeing this girl before she was 15. And then there's this picture. Maybe we should, you know, and he didn't even say anything that bad, but was just like, maybe we should kind of talk about how we kind of address the Tom Woods thing going forward. And they just kicked him out, right? Like just like instantly gone, deleted the post. Like,
oh, I know. It was
unreal how much they wanted that tapped down. And I get it. I guess you're supporting an organization. You don't want to highlight like your worst flaws, but it, you know, as a Christian, we talk about taking the plank out of our eye. This makes us better, right? Like, I don't want to just walk around ignoring this plank because it makes me seem like a better person to just ignore that it's there. Like, at some point, like, for the sake of the Mises Caucus, you would want them to be able to address the Tom Woods stuff, you know? But it was clear where they were at. I mean, many of them seem to have come to the light as far as, like, Trump goes specifically. But they still don't seem quite done with like the conservative strategy. And I don't think they see how closely those were aligned together. Like they were fine if it was all anti-immigrant stuff, but if he's not releasing the files, the Epstein files, then they're going to stick on board with a bit here. We got a few comments here. I'm sure they'll be up on the screen. Archie says, or she might be in prison. That can happen. I can dream. Aaron says she's going to be so busy being between the MC chair, the Trump gig, and a cosmetic dealer. Her bigoted makeup line did not work out the way she wanted it to. She came up with one color, never produced it, and then folded. And then Big John, co-host of this show, says, has a question for you, and this is a place we were going to go anyhow. Yeah. John, you're a lawyer. Any thoughts as to whether or not McArdle can or will be referred for a criminal case?
So from what I've seen, and I would like to preface this by saying that I practice in Michigan and Florida, so I'm not an expert in D.C. law, even though there's generally a lot of similarities between different jurisdictions. From what I saw in the investigatory committee report, I do think there is the possibility, a significant possibility, that some kind of crime was committed there. As far as her actually being prosecuted for it, I think it's going to depend on a few things, because ultimately it is the prosecutor who makes the decision, or at least someone in the prosecutor's office, or if we're talking federally, the attorney general's office, that's going to make the decision on whether or not to prosecute. They take a lot of different factors into account. And now, I've never been a prosecutor. I'm a criminal defense attorney. But having run into prosecutors a lot, I've been able to talk to them about this kind of thing. One of the factors that's often considered is, and it's not dispositive, they can still go forward either way, is what the victim of the crime, assuming it's a crime with a victim, wants. Now, with the LP, it's hard to say exactly what the LP wants, because it's made up of so many different people. But from seeing the investigatory committee report, it does seem like the LP, or the LNC rather, does want something to happen. Now, the next thing to consider is how bad of a crime this actually was. And I mean, I do think on that factor, I do think, if assuming that a crime was committed here, and it certainly looks like one was, that we're talking about a sizable amount of money. I mean, this wasn't $15 taken from a CVS or something like that. So that is taken into account too, because obviously not every single crime can be prosecuted. There's already so much backlog in the courts, no matter what jurisdiction you're talking about, that not every single slight violation of a statute is going to be prosecuted. Now, the other thing that I've thought about, as far as this being in D.C. or possibly being prosecuted federally, is Angela McArdle's connection to the Trump administration. If this was brought by Pam Bondi's office or investigated by Pam Bondi's office, do I have trust that the federal government, especially as it stands right now, is going to be fair about someone who they see as an ally to them? Because she did do a lot to help, to try to help Trump. The answer to that is no. I have absolutely zero confidence that they would be fair and that they would go after her unless they thought they, or I don't think they would go after her unless they really thought they had to. There's different arguments you can make on jurisdiction as far as who could actually prosecute this. And then obviously there is also the issue of trying to recover this money civilly, which I know the investigation report, or the investigatory report, I believe it said that we're trying to recover the money in a lawsuit would probably cost more than it would actually be worth. But I do think it's still worth looking into whether you can have a lawyer do this pro se, a lawyer do this for free. Pro se is when you represent yourself. Pro bono is what I was talking about. But whether you could have a lawyer do this pro bono, whether you could raise money specifically earmarked for this, because I do think it would be a big landmark to have some kind of decision on this and get the money back on this to show that really this LNC has taken a step forward. At this point, if I had to guess, I don't think that she's going to be criminally prosecuted, for a variety of reasons. One is one of the ones I talked about regarding the Trump administration. But depending on what the statute of limitations is, and I would have to look into a few different statutes in different jurisdictions to determine that, there is a decent amount of time to be able to file this. And with my experience, a statute of limitations for a felony, and this would likely be a felony as alleged, is not going to be 6 months or something like that. Like, there's going to be a lot more time on that. So we can wait and see on that. I know Karen Ann Harlos was tweeting the other day that she had made a report to try to get some kind of criminal case started. So that could spur things along too, because I can't say whether, obviously there's been news about this as far as the LNC publishing the investigatory report and as far as this being all over social media. But it's hard to say for sure whether someone actually referred this to the authorities for prosecution. So it's still kind of a wait and see right now, but I'm still not holding my breath.
That's kind of about where I am too. It's a tough, I would like to see it, but like, I think it would be cool for us to be a political party that holds our own people accountable. William Del Pilar, our gracious benefactor, editor, and demigod here for Grumblings Media, says, it would seem that Angela McArdle's small potatoes in the grand scheme of things. I can't see her being charged on something that's political like this. The only way would seem to be to pursue her civilly. Yeah, like, it's tough. It's weighing different things. Criminal, they decide whether to prosecute. As you mentioned, they may just not decide to do it even after you filed, but at least you can file for free. You file civilly, you're guaranteed to get your day in court, but it costs money, right? Like, and so you're kind of...
Yeah, and there's all sorts of procedural things that go on before you even get to a trial, all sorts of motion work and motions to dismiss, motions for summary judgment. So it's a process. You're going to need someone willing to put in the work for that if you really want to take it that far.
Yeah, and like, yeah, and as William says, maybe it's just too small potatoes for us to do it. I think it would be cool, but like, I understand that the system is the system and it's complicated. I left the Libertarian Party in many ways just because of what it become, but also I just, political parties are just so, there's so much minutia, you know, there's so many detailed things. I almost got our local party in a lot of trouble. I did not know it was against the bylaws, I guess our state or local bylaws or something to, I hosted our, I decided to make the big decision to host our like local convention at a cannery to like, you know, can food for like the needy. I thought it was a great idea, totally against like 8 bylaws. And I just remember being so frustrated. It's like, well, if you want to change it, you know, pay this money and show up here and then you can wait your turn and protest it. And then if you get 8 votes, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, can I not just do the right thing? Why is it that like hosting a charity event breaks 8 bylaws, but I can hire like a total MAGA person for the social media like tomorrow? Like it just feels like doing the right thing to do is so hard and doing the wrong thing is so easy. And that's probably just politics in general, not even just libertarian politics. It's just the nature of the beast for you. Yeah. All right. Let's go ahead here. Something that we may have contentiousness on. Nick Sarwark offering his services to be appointed to the LNC. Full disclosure again, Nick and I do not enjoy good terms. He has been dishonest with me. And of course, the viral video of him wanting the police involved for assault when he bumped into somebody. Thankfully, that was caught on tape, and so he was not able to put that person into prison. I am not a fan of Nick. However, I will say Nick did preside over the most successful era of the Libertarian Party. He's very good at what he does. He's, you know, a good chair, you know, as far as like a political chair and everything goes. I understand why people might be tempted with the idea. For me, this is kind of, this is why I originally joined the Mises Caucus, is I wanted people like him gone. And now he's back and offering his services. And I'm just like, I don't want to take the step backward that the Mises Caucus had, but Sarwark seems to be like the other to step backward. Is this something that you'd support or consider, or maybe is it time to go forward? I guess that's a loaded question because you obviously can sense my perspective and point of view in this, but I guess just your thoughts about Sarwark offering to be part of the LNC.
So I think there are kind of multiple perspectives on this. So on the negative side, which I'll start with, obviously it could re-energize the Mises Caucus because so much of their initial organizing was opposing Nick Sarwark. That was one of their huge things at the start. And that really got them a lot of play and a lot of membership. For anyone who doesn't know, I used to be part of the Mises Caucus for a couple of years when it first started. And I think it was safe to say at the time that Nick and I did not get along. Nick and I now, I think we're on better terms. And I don't know him well or anything like that, but we don't snipe at each other particularly or anything like that. As far as the positives of this, I know that Nick can be abrasive, to say the least, for sure. He's definitely an acquired taste for people. I've had times where he said something and I'm like, oh, no, I can't agree with that. But I do think he knows, if anyone knows how to dig out of this hole right now, I do think he could at least provide good advice as far as actually how to get the party on the right track financially, getting the membership back up, all of that. So am I supporting his chair run if he were to do that right now? No, I don't think so. As an at-large, if it's him or Ben Weir, I think I would choose Nick there. I mean, he's very, at the very least, he correctly is able to identify a lot of the problems going on right now. I know there's the thing with the video. I do remember seeing that a couple years ago. I remember seeing someone else say that there was an alternate angle of it that made it look like maybe he thought he was bumped into, and I don't know, so I'm not gonna try to argue for that because I don't know exactly. I don't remember that enough. But the guy did run the party pretty successfully. So I do think at the very least it could make sense to consult with him and see what could be done differently financially. Maybe even what was done at the time the party was actually successful to try to actually make it grow membership and get money again. Because if you've seen the most recent FEC reports, the party is hemorrhaging money right now. If it stays at this current trend, we are very soon going to be at a point where cash on hand is about equal to debt. And once we keep getting further than that, the situation is going to get more and more dire.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. I think it's a little like, I'm fine with consulting him. I want to consult him almost like Silence of the Lambs, like Hannibal Lecter. Like, I don't want to promote him to police chief, but I'll take his advice, like if he's giving it out for free. I'm just going to watch my EMTs if they have to be in the same room with him at any point. You know, I think it's one of those situations for me.
I do, and I obviously, like I said, me and Nick used to not get along. I like a lot of what he posts now. There's things I disagree with as well. But you also have to look at who the realistic options are for an at-large spot right now. And if I had to be honest, I don't think that Nick is going to get an at-large spot right now because I can't see this board voting for him. But if it were between Ben Weir or any of the other names I've heard floated around, because I have heard Weir's name come up as a very possible compromise candidate, and I don't really get how Ben Weir is a compromise candidate because I would think he would be the opposite of a compromise candidate. If it comes down to someone I have disagreements with, who knows what they're doing and won't post about how the Jews are the most violent minority versus someone who seemingly has no idea what they're doing and makes posts about how Jews are the most violent minority, I think I'm always going to pick the first one there.
Yeah. Archer says bring back Joe Bishop Henchman. And I like JBH. I get Christmas cards from him. I always appreciate it.
I do too, actually.
Yeah. He's a cool guy. Aaron asks, how about Valerie on paper with them sharing the role openly, sort of like Malagon having two votes through Kathy, but openly. I guess, are you cool with Sarwark ruling through Valerie? I will say I don't have any, outside of her last name, I've never had any problems with Valerie. I know Ovens O'Brien, who I like, calls her the better Sarwark or whatever, and says I don't recall any major Valerie controversies. I guess I won't pass the sins of the husband along to the wife. Everybody knows what I think of the husband. I think that it might be something you would want to iron out, you know, if you're Valerie, yeah. But I will
add to that. I have had a lot of disagreements with Nick over the years, but I couldn't see Nick putting Donald Trump on the convention stage and essentially endorsing him. It seems like a lot of the old disagreements, like if you look at the party 2018-ish, even 2020, because the Mises Caucus, while it had a whole lot of issues at the time that were starting to grow, it wasn't as bad as it has become now. But if you look at the disagreements back then, they're nothing compared to the stuff we're seeing now. I mean, the whole Trump thing, basically not even supporting our candidate, and then having the candidate who was the runner-up be whatever you want to call him. The guy can't go 10 seconds without blaming the Jews for something. I mean, that's not what – there were disagreements in 2016, 2018, 2020, but I don't think they were this bad.
Yeah, we were never borderline putting the Democrat up on stage at a convention, right? Like, that was,
right.
As much as he was a beltway, you know, libertarian, like respectability kind of thing. And that's not even my biggest problems with him. I know, I guess from the political side, I know my issue with Nick. And it's funny, I guess this puts in perspective how different it is, right? Because we had Nick, and I remember he on multiple posts would be like, how did government grow during COVID? And I would respond, detailed all these answers. He ignored me. And then I saw him do the same thing on another post and another post. And I'm like, okay, this guy doesn't get it. And I think, look, much like I did this with Jeremy Kaufman too, when he would, you know, do the race baiting answers. I would give him legitimate answers.
Yeah.
But after getting ignored like 18 times, I'm kind of like, oh, okay, you're just asking questions. Just asking questions, but you don't really want the answer, right? And so this was kind of Nick's thing. And we absolutely pooped the bed during COVID as far as our lockdown and mandate messaging. Now I will say this, we at least did say we were against it. We just didn't do it as strongly and frequently as we needed to. But compare that to today, we've issued no statement from the Libertarian Party unless something has changed in the last week. Because I remember I looked this up when we had Nikayla on last time. We had no statements about mass deportation since like 2016 or 2018 or something. It's been forever. We had one Pride post month, but we pulled it, and it was called the most embarrassing post we've ever made or something like that.
Yeah.
We've had no posts like about the worst stuff that Trump is doing. We haven't posted about ICE since last year. No, like not even mentioning the word ICE. Like it was like we are, in as much as my problem with Nick was he didn't even understand how government was growing during COVID, which was idiotic for the chair of the Libertarian Party. I'm sorry. It just was. And I understand why the conservatives and frankly, normal libertarians were upset about that. But what we are doing today by not talking about these atrocities at all, at least they said something back then, not saying anything at all about this, just kind of shows like Angela's gone, but we're still in a bad place. You know, we're still not doing what we need to do.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It's really weird because Stephen Nikayla, the chair, he will make some pretty good posts on immigration and opposing mass deportations and ICE.
I've shared
that,
by the way.
Yeah, and they will sometimes get retweeted by the LP National account, but they will never come directly from the LP National account. I don't know if it's something to do with some agreement with the social media director, the communications director, Brian McWilliams, or what it is. Or I don't know if it's that they don't want the party's name and the logo attached to that message, which would be kind of alarming. But that really has stood out to me, because this is honestly probably the worst abuse by Trump right now, is what he's doing to immigrants. And I mean, even non-immigrants, there are American citizens getting detained for the color of their skin, for people thinking they're immigrants and things like that. The fact that we can't lead on that is just discouraging. It's disheartening. I mean, who would want to put a bunch of time, money, effort into a party that can't even be loud about this?
Yeah, I looked up what I said, just, you know, searching the party, going by the most recent history. No tweets about ICE since 2023, so we've missed a couple years there. No tweets about due process since 2024, and the mass deportation we last mentioned in 2019. And then removing the LGBTQ thing, even though there's over 520 current laws being, like, worked on against LGBTQ individuals, we are dropping the ball again, just like we did during COVID, right? Like, or worse than we did during COVID, by not saying anything when the world needs us most to speak up, right?
And what's been interesting too, I don't know if you've seen during the month of July, there's been, I think it's called like the month of tyranny or days of 31 days of tyranny thing on
that.
LP National account. And I actually saw the original poll, because there was a poll for that where you could decide what the worst abuses of government were that they would cover. And there was one that said something like three-letter agencies, and I don't know if that post has been made yet. I haven't seen it, but it might be coming. But that was in the poll. But there were so many different possible answers on that poll, and there was nothing that said ICE or mass deportations or treatment of immigrants. There are things that they're highlighting in the in this campaign right now, this social media campaign, like ESG scores and things like that. I mean, there can be issues with some of these things, and some of them are done voluntarily. But to highlight ESG as the worst, as one of the worst types of tyranny, over people being sent to foreign gulags without due process is just maddening. I mean, it doesn't make any sense unless you're just trying to not piss off the people that are actually okay with the mass deportations, unless you're trying to appeal to the Trump supporters that are on board with that kind of stuff still, which isn't something we should be doing.
Yeah, like, the posts make people mad, but all the people mad were either part of the Trump sellout. Like, they'll sell out to a right-winger for, like, a Charms blow pop, and if our candidate's gay, they're gone, right? Like, yeah. Tiptoeing around them is maddening. And so, like, to me, like, yes, they're upset about the LGBTQ stuff, and, like, that's the only reason I even flirt with the Libertarian Party, is because we're not bigoted, you know? So, like, I want a party that celebrates this kind of stuff, frankly. Like, I want a party that celebrates Passover and Christmas and Kwanzaa. You know what I mean? Like, I would love for us to just be we're not just dancing around this issue anymore. We're celebrating everything, as opposed to just, like, tolerating everything, because obviously, as we've seen, tolerance isn't enough. It's too easy to get pushed into the pool of bigotry when all you do is merely tolerate something. Let's celebrate individualism. We don't have this problem with gun rights, right? Like, when we say, like, you have the right to defend yourself, and somebody's like, yeah, gun rights, we don't go, oh, do we have to say what kind of self-defense? Can't we just say self-defense in general? I don't want to talk about, like, guns. Like, come on, right? Like, we don't do that. So why are we, like, you know, getting all twisted over gay rights and stuff. John, I had one more issue, just since it's the free-for-all and it was big during the week. I don't know if you've had a chance to look it over. I have read through all of the documents provided by Tulsi Gabbard talking about how Trump commit or Obama committed a coup against Donald Trump before he took office. I guess I'd like your thoughts about that, and I'll just supplement them with what I've read before we got a wrap. Anybody who's watching right now, a couple things for me. If you got any questions or comments, feel free to leave them in the chat. We have been taking them all night. If you would do us a favor and give us the old thumbs up when you are watching this, I really appreciate that as well. A like and a share will go a long way. If you'd like to subscribe to Grumblings Media and the Free For All, please do that as well, whether you're on YouTube, Rumble, Twitter, Facebook, wherever we got our accounts, you can follow us there. But yeah, John, your thoughts about the Gabbard revelation, I guess.
So I'll preface this by saying, unlike you, I have not read the documents. I have heard about the story. My initial inclination, and it's not based on examining the evidence yet, I'm happy to admit that because I have not looked at the report, but my initial inclination is that Trump is doing this to try to distract from the Epstein stuff, because that's what seems to be going on with a whole lot of things right now. I also have seen Donald Trump and many of his fans and those in his inner circle make a lot of claims as far as fraud and election interference that haven't really had any justification behind them. Like when you talk about the stuff with the Dominion voting machines in 2020, there have been so many defamation suits and other lawsuits about the election fraud issue in 2020. And when these have actually gone to court and both sides have had to put up their evidence, the sides that were claiming election fraud have generally not fared very well. So there is at least a pretty significant pattern of tall tales, if you want to call it, coming from the Trump team. Do I think it's possible that Obama could have lied, or do I think it's probable that Obama could have made up lies about a political opponent? Absolutely. I mean, politicians lie all the time. They do all sorts of sketchy things. Do I think Obama did some kind of coup to keep Trump out? Do I think the 2020 election was stolen from Trump? No, I don't. I'm sorry.
That's okay. The documents are actually in reference to the 2016 election. Now, the funny thing is I read through this whole thing, and in Gabbard's own presser, she quotes, like, it's nowhere close to, you know, quote, election hacks, unquote. I searched all the documents she revealed for the term U.S. election hack, spelled different ways. Could not find one single instance. Whatever she's quoting is in her imagination. The essence of the matter, for those who are listening, and Big John and I may dive into this more next week or if more information comes of this, because honestly, it is probably just an Epstein distraction. I mean, really, that's probably what it is. But it's an email chain that she revealed for evidence, and it is just guys saying, hey, listen, they're not attacking the voting systems, but they are trying to infiltrate networks, and indeed, they hacked the DNC. That's not even a doubt. Trump himself certified that Trump meddled in the election in 2018, right? Like, talked about it publicly, on record, everything like that. Like, it's, we know that Russia definitely tried to mess around and get a result in the elections they won. We do this to other countries too. This is not weird, right? The issue that Gabbard is trying to create is that Obama somehow said that they not only, that Russia hacked the machines, the actual infrastructure, the machines, to change vote totals. And so she provides a bunch of quotes where it's a bunch of guys saying they didn't hack the machines. There is no hacking on the machines. They never hacked our infrastructure. They never changed any votes, right? And so she's got all these quotes, and of course, because they didn't, right? Like, that's not an argument. And anybody in this email chain, the chain isn't even a disagreement. The chain is just a whole bunch of, like, oh, yeah, they didn't hack the machines, but they hacked the DNC. They're trying to get information. They're trying to figure out where to place these targeted hoax ads on social media. Right? That's what we know, right? Anybody who read the Mueller report is aware of this, right? Like, it's not a this isn't like a grand conspiracy. And then she released something yesterday, and I read through all that real quick. And it was just, the funny thing is there's no author even, but it's during Trump's time in office in 2020. He had a lot of problems with the ICA report and was like, they didn't even consider that they had problems with me too. And it's like, okay, but like none of this proves, if lying about your political opponent is treason and a coup, Trump is the first one going down for that, right? Like, I mean, that's, you better hope that's not treason and a coup. Otherwise he's in a lot of trouble.
For sure. And I mean, I would be shocked if Russia didn't try to meddle in elections. I mean, I think that's what you'd expect from Vladimir Putin. I mean, the U.S. does it to other countries. I'm sure a bunch of countries are doing that.
Yeah, I mean, at this point in being a superpower, I hate to say it, but it's almost foolish if you don't. Your interests are, if a country votes a certain way. They shouldn't do it. It's still evil. But, you know, like, you kind of gotta, right? Like, if one guy's going to cut off all your oil and the other guy is not, then you want to make sure that the guy who is not wins, right? Like, it's just kind of that simple.
Yeah, and I mean, I would never mistake Vladimir Putin for a good guy.
Yeah, right. Right. And Big John in the comments here, I love it. He said, plus Trump himself went to court to expand presidential immunity. So he can't touch Obama anyway. So even if Obama did it, it might as well not have done it because
it's an official act.
Right. It's an official act. So, you know, nothing he could do. John, I know we're going to wrap things up here. What do you have? So let's talk for a minute. I know you've got the chair and you've got the judicial committee. What do you kind of have on the horizon until Grand Rapids?
So we're going to be rolling out a few things as far as the chair campaign. And obviously I'm going to be getting my work done on the Judicial Committee as well. I am working on getting a website together. I'm coming up with some possible proposed bylaw changes. Nothing, obviously, I won't be able to institute these right now or anything like that, but just some possible suggestions as far as preventing some kind of Mises takeover from happening again. I'll also be making some other portions of what I like to call my chair platform public as far as what I think the LP should do in order to actually get back on track, actually bring money in again and bring membership back and even encourage new members to join. So because I have been asked this, whether I actually am running. I am, for anyone who's questioning that. But I do plan on hitting up some state conventions. If anyone would like to talk to me about that, I am happy to hear it. I am happy to speak with anyone about what my vision for the Libertarian Party would be and who else I would support on the LNC once we hear more about who's running. So I'm just going to be focusing on that. Obviously, my work at Fagertarians, I'm sure we're still going to have a lot to cover. And we will see what happens over the next year because it is going to be a very formative year for the Libertarian Party. It's going to decide whether the party even possibly collapses or whether it rises out of the ashes.
Who are your opponents? Do you know who else is running for chair?
So I've heard names floated, but besides this guy who calls himself Grumpy Gnome on Twitter that likes to tweet at me a lot, I don't know that anyone has actually officially announced. I do know that Stephen, at least when I spoke to him previously, did not intend to run for re-election, or at least was leaning that way. I'm not sure if he's changed his mind because that was a few months ago. But it's mostly a rumor mill thing right now. It would be very interesting if Angela McArdle were to run again. As much as I'd like to say she would have too much shame to do that, I don't think that's the case because I'm not sure she's actually capable of feeling shame. But I will say that if me and Angela are on the debate stage together, I think I would have a fun time having a little conversation with her because usually I'm unable to with her having me blocked and everything.
right there with you. One day she wishes me happy birthday. The next day I'm blocked. And seeing the direction she took, I understand why she did it. This was a very long time ago. John, any way that people should hit you up? I know you said for your chair, the website's up and coming and everything, but if people wanted to contact you or help you out or whatever it is, any shows that you want to throw out there, any way to follow you for anything like that?
Sure. So as many of you probably know, I am the head admin at Fakertarians. So we have a Facebook page. There's twitter.com/Fakertarians. I still refuse to call it X. We have a podcast that we've started getting it running a little bit more lately, and we're trying to pick that up as well. I also have my chair account for Twitter, which is Angela4 LNC Chair. The story behind that is when Angela McArdle resigned as chair at 2 a.m., as one does, she changed her username to, I think it's Real Angela MC. And I immediately thought, okay, this is hilarious. I got to make an account and take this username, and I'll figure out what to do with it later. That was before I decided to run for chair. But when I ran for chair and I just had that sitting there with nothing going on with it, I was like, okay, this is perfect right here. But it's Angela4 LNC chair. So that's where you can find me. I'm also active, my personal account on Facebook. I have another personal account on Twitter. So there are a lot of ways to reach me if someone wants to get in contact with me.
Awesome. John, thank you so much for swinging by, lending us your Thursday night. Everybody else who's listening, again, this has been the free-for-all with Grumblings Media. Thursday nights, 10 p.m. Subscribe, hit the bell for notification, throw us a thumbs up, share, subscribe, whatever you got to do. We just appreciate any amount of attention you can give us so that we can continue to produce productive conversations like this one. I'm Hody Johns, usually with Big John. Thank you so much, everybody. We look forward to talking to you next week.